I will tell you 2 minutes after.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for attending this talk. And I also want to thank the organizers of this symposium, Christian and Vincent, for inviting me to present some of our work that we've been doing in collaboration with our colleagues in Nigeria. My main collaborators for this talk are Dr. Vincent Ume at the Horticultural Research Institute in Nigeria and Dr. Joseph Anikwe at the Cocoa Research Institute of Nigeria. I also would like to thank my employer, Auburn University, for allowing me to engage in these collaborations. This is really not my main, you know, project. I mean, it's not even on my job description, but because I'm originally from Africa and I know some of the issues that relate to agriculture and pest management in Africa, some of them have been alluded to by Professor Khan, and so I'm very interested in engaging myself in this type of collaboration, and my employer has allowed me to travel to Africa every year to facilitate and help on this collaboration. So, a little bit about Nigeria, which is where most of my collaborations that I'm going to be presenting today happened. It's the largest country in terms of population in Africa. A lot of languages spoken, but English, the British English, is the official language. Nigeria is regarded as the Africa's sleeping economic giant. Agriculture used to be a big deal in Nigeria until the advent of the petroleum industry. Still, agriculture is still represent about 60% still represent a huge economy because 60% of Nigerians work in this sector. Nigeria is located within the equator. It's tropical, so you can begin to see that it's a big deal for entomologists, really. I mean, it's when you're talking about tropical zone. And the main cash crops are cocoa, which I'm going to talk a little bit about today, palm oil and groundnuts, and then the food crops are maize, cassava, yam, and sugar cane, fruit, and some fruit and vegetable crops. This is the map of Nigeria. Most of the collaborative work that I'm going to be talking today took place, around the southwest region here. Just a picture of some of the staple crops that we have in Nigeria. I wanted just to mention that the issue of food security is a big deal globally, but it's also perhaps more of a bigger deal in Africa, because when you look at this food production index here in Africa, we're not able to match, the global food production. And given the population explosion forecast, we really need to address a lot of food production issues or food security issues in Africa. And, of course, pest management is a big deal when you're dealing with food security. So a few of my IPM-related collaborations in Nigeria have, some projects on crucifers. I'm going to talk about that today. And I have some fruit IPM projects that I'm involved in, citrus and mangoes. Probably going to mention a little bit about mangoes today. And then cocoa, which is also a big deal in West Africa, so I'm going to talk about that today. I also have some collaborations on straw products IPM, but I'm not going to even talk about because of time. All right. One thing I want to mention, I know that this symposium is more about semiochemicals, which is my interest, but I want to mention that IPM in Nigeria, and as maybe most parts of Africa, is still what we call level 1 IPM, okay? Which means it's still pesticide intensive, some cultural practices, and when we talk about semiochemicals is still being used mainly for pest monitoring. So you're not going to have this, you know, instances where you know some of the nice stuff that you presented today. Maybe I'm not aware right now of any of those ongoing studies. I mean, but that's where we need to move into in the near future. The other issue about pesticide use is that some of the pesticides there are still the old conventional pesticides, some of the ones that have been banned here, although there are some new pesticides that have been evaluated. And of course, botanicals like neem is also very popular in that part of the world. So let me start with a project on the management of crucifer pests in southwestern Nigeria. This study was conducted in collaboration with NIHOT, which is the Horticultural Institute. And this is the institute, the gate of the institute. The main cabbage crucifer crop in southwestern Nigeria is cabbage. And there's a lot of production constraints. Mainly the environmental conditions are not optimal for cabbage production because of the, you know, rain, you know, it rains a lot and that doesn't really make cabbage production conducive. But perhaps more important is the issue of insect pests and diseases, which I'm going to talk about today. So today I'm just going to talk briefly about how we use pheromones to monitor and look at the pest population dynamics of some of the pests, and then also maybe mention briefly about some of the insecticide trial that we did. The three main pests of cabbage in Nigeria, the diamondback moth, which is cosmopolitan, you find it almost everywhere in the world, but perhaps more important also is the cabbage cluster caterpillar, Crocidolomia binotalis, which we simply call Crossy, and this is a crambid or paralid, and it's bigger than the diamondback moth, so the damage is a little more extensive. We have other pests, but these are the two major pests that most farmers will have to deal with on a regular basis if they were to grow cabbage successfully. And of course, many of us are familiar with the kind of damage done by these caterpillar pests. They cause not only leaf damage, but they also cause damage to the head, cabbage head. They increase susceptibility to plant diseases. And typically, the farmers like to spray. One of the issues about spraying is that it's expensive, but also, if they continue to spray without really knowing when to spray, then, that is not good for resistance. And so these are some of the issues that we deal with when we work in that part of the world, which is almost also the same issue even in the U.S. here. Some of our farmers here in the U.S. have the same issues, only that they may have a little bit more tools at their disposal than farmers in, that part of the world. So briefly, some of the studies that we did were just to see, this was the first study to look at the population dynamics of some of these pests in that region to see maybe when do we really need to focus on their management. And basically, some of the challenges with collaboration, some of our scientists over there is that the research materials are in many cases not available down there. So in this case, I had to buy some of the pheromone traps and lures and ship them across, which is also a challenge because shipping, research materials across countries is, there's a lot of barriers that you have to go through. But if you're ready to do that, it could be profitable, very rewarding. When eventually you get results from those research. I know most of us are familiar with this kind of study, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the methodology, but just mention that we did, put the traps out there using standard protocols. These are some of the things we do here. We use the same protocols that we use in the United States, for our experiment, and then we did damages assessment and yield. And then, so this is, some of these studies were conducted at the research stations, and then later on we moved it to the farmer's field. So these are some of the plots at the research station, very small plots to start with. And then, of course, we put the pheromones out there. Then the insecticide treatments that we also looked at is, we looked at chlorpyrifos, which is currently the standard. And then we also look at new insecticide like Conquest, which is a combination of cypermethrin and acetamiprid. We know this is an OP, and this is a pyrethroid, and this is a neonic. And then we also look at neem, because neem is becoming very popular. Farmers always talk about neem. They ask questions about, oh, is neem going to be very effective? Can they use neem? So we looked at that. And let me just show a few results here. These are some of the slides and the results that were sent to me by my collaborator. So you can see, again, it's you. The slides are going to be a little different, you know, from, you know, maybe project to project. So here we looked at the, population dynamics in pheromone traps of diamondback moth. So the work started in May, which was week one, and then you can see that the peak adult catch was, occurred week four. But typically farmers, when they start spraying from week two, almost on a weekly basis. And so I know it's very difficult to correlate adult moth trap catch with, you know, and use that as a threshold. But then we also collected larva counts. So I'm not going to show the slide here, but what we found out was that maybe if the farmers could get away, if they sprayed week two and then week five, just two sprays, they might be able to get away with that by correlating the adult trap catch with the larva count. You know, that's what some of our recommendations to the farmers, rather than try to spray almost every week, or, you know, maybe they can get away with that. But just a few results regarding the insecticide treatments. The Tamex is the OP, of course, very, you know, effective. So we know that maybe resistance is still not an issue right now regarding that OP. Neem, unfortunately, we were expecting neem to be a little more active than this, but it wasn't as active. But neem really is an anti-fidant, so it's not really it's not a neuro, you know, toxin. So you know, you usually don't expect complete control, but to the farmer, they would like to see better, you know, control with neem. Then the new insecticide that we tested, the combination of the permethrin and acetamiprid, also worked beautifully. And then when we looked at the same thing on Crossy, which is the other pest, you see that those two synthetic insecticide work. Neem also worked very well here, because the mean number of Crossy per plant was less than one, which was really good. So neem worked for Crossy, but not as well for diamondback moth. And then when we looked at the damage rating, the percentage of damage cabbage, we found out that yes, those insecticides work well, but still we're still getting some damage. So it shows that, you know, maybe there are some other issues that we really need to look at to see what we can do to reduce the damage. But I'm just going to go through this. One thing I wanted to mention here that's really interesting is that the cabbage head yields. So when you look at the yield for the OP, which was the most effective against the caterpillars, the yield was even less than the yield for Nim. Here we can't even begin to understand what is happening. Or could it be that Nim is doing something to the plant, you know, to enhance the yield? Or is this just a fluke? We repeated this and we still found that trend. So this is one of the things that we're trying to follow up. Why, you know, the yield for Nim, which wasn't the best for insect control, is even higher. Okay, so those are some of the things that we're actually looking at to see why we, you know, what is really happening there. So I'm going to move quickly to the study on the mango, which is, this one is really interesting in the sense that we had to improvise some of the things, you know, because we couldn't really do things the way we would have loved to do it here. We had to improvise. So mango is a big deal in Nigeria and most of West Africa. It's a, you know, very, you know, lovely tree fruit. People love to plant mango in their backyard. It's like, you know, backyard, their fruit crop, and then there are a lot of big mango plantations that are coming up. So it's, you know, it's becoming a cash crop, really. They are shipping, people are beginning to ship mango out of Nigeria to other parts of the world. And so, and it's highly adapted to all of the ecological zones of Nigeria. But fruit flies are a big deal, a big problem of mango. And so, the main, you know, the native fruit fly species is Ceratitis coxyra. But recently, a new fruit fly species was introduced, the Bactrocera, which is of Asian origin. It was possibly introduced from Sri Lanka, and you know, around 2005, and that has really, you know, become a major issue all over the region. Okay, this is just my mango tree, a picture of a mango tree. So this is the invasive one, Bactrocera. And then this is the native one. And then you can see the adults typically would oviposit on developing mango fruit. And then this is the kind of damage that you see, you know, from the worms. Okay, the first issue is monitoring fruit flies. So in this part of the world, this is the recommended, this is the standard trap, the McPhail trap, that they, you know, recommend for monitoring fruit flies in California. And you know, and typically they will bait this with a protein bait or a combination of some host plant attractants. The issue is that this is too expensive. Okay, when we started this project, I actually bought some of these traps and the lures and shipped them to took them with me to Nigeria, and we evaluated it. But it's too expensive. It's not something that is sustainable. And so the idea is to develop a locally made protein bait and trap for fruit flies. And then this is how we went, you know, we would look for an inexpensive McPhail trap, which is this plastic bottle, which is common. I mean, in Nigeria, I mean, bottled water is really common, just like here. And so this is like a waste. So you just get it out there and you can, you know, so this is what we use. And then we also we develop a local protein bait, which I'm going to talk briefly about, and this trap female fruit flies and gives us about 2-to-1 ratio. Okay, and then you can also add a toxicant to this, you know, to kill the fruit flies. So the local protein bait that we developed was you know, a brewery waste. People love to drink beer in Nigeria, as any other part of the world. And so you have a lot of breweries. And so you have this brewery waste that which is nothing. I mean, you can buy them. It's a waste. I mean, you don't need to buy them. You can go to get them. And we made that into, you know, a protein bait. I'm not going to go through the process. And then we evaluated the brewery waste at 2 concentration, low and high. And then we evaluated to our yeast, which is like fairly standard protein bait, and then the control. And then we did this on three mango varieties. The result is that majority of the fruit flies that we collected were the invasive, 98% of the fruit flies that we collected were the invasive. Very few native fruit flies. So this is a story of an invasive fruit fly completely displacing the native one, because before the arrival of the invasive one, the fruit fly problem we had was with Cerotitis cocerea. But now you can hardly find that native one. We're still looking at why and what is the mechanism. What is the mechanism for the displacement? How much time do I have?
Oh, you still have 9 minutes.
Oh, great. Okay. You took a look at me. I thought I was there.
No, I said nothing.
Okay, great. All right. So just to look at the population dynamics, okay, when we looked at using the trap and the bait, we found out that, this is where you get the largest catch of the fruit fly in April. And April, that correspond or coincide with the period of the maturity, of the fruit. So the fruit start to mature and ripen around that, which is not really that surprising. And then after June, you find no fruit fly, which is post-harvest. So although the fruit fly, what does this mean? It means that although the fruit fly is polyphagous, but it tends to synchronize. It looks like the population dynamics is synchronized with that of mango, because you find other crops around the mango, but you hardly find fruit flies after June. So we're still looking at what is happening there. And then when we also look at the variety, we found out that, this is the Saigon variety is really, perhaps a bait for very susceptible to fruit fly. And then maybe if we're looking at host of fruit attractant for fruit fly, that will be a variety to look at in the future. And so when we look at the trapping efficiency of some of our prodem baits, the brew waste was really good. At high concentration, as good as the torula yeast. Not as good as at low concentration. So we think we have a local winner here, the brew waste at high concentration. The same thing when you look at the fruit drop, okay? Now you can, it's not enough to look at the fruit fly. You want to see what effect does it have on the fruit drop, okay? And when you look at the mean number of drop fruits per tree, you look at the brew waste at high concentration, which is the A, you have very low, fruit drop, which is really good. So the summary is that plastic bottle traps baited with locally made brew waste is a cost-effective tactic against mango fruits in Nigeria. And so when one of my friends who likes to drink beer had, he said they can use that to promote beer drinking also in Nigeria. So, okay, the waste can also be used for other things. So I think that will be one thing to sell the idea to some people. Finally, let me talk briefly about management of cocoa myriads in Nigeria, which I am working on in collaboration with the Cocoa Research Institute. This is my main collaborator, Dr. Joseph Anikwe, who also visited my lab, just left my lab a few months ago. So each of my collaborators they visited my lab, see how we do things. So that's part of the collaboration, and they go back, and I visit them on a regular basis. And this was my visit to the last visit last year to the institute. This is a cocoa plantation there. Cocoa is a big deal in Nigeria. It's Nigeria's leading agricultural export commodity. But the issue, of course, is with incidence of pests and diseases. The most important pest is the brown cocoa myriad, which can cause up to more than 30% yield loss. And like I said, this is a cash crop. For those of you who like to drink hot cocoa or, eat chocolate, you want to see us solve the problem with brown cocoa myriad, because it's a big deal all over West Africa. 70% of what cocoa is produced in West and Central Africa. And these are the countries that are producing it. And nearly 2 million smallholder cocoa farmers in Nigeria. And cocoa is Nigeria's leading ag. I've mentioned that cocoa byproducts drive almost 70 billion U.S. Market and provides over 60,000 jobs in the U.S. alone. Okay, so it's a very important topic. And this is the map of West Africa. This is Nigeria. This whole region is a cocoa region. The business starts from the plantation where you grow the cocoa, and then you harvest, and then you remove, you know, the bean from the shell, and then you do the fermentation and the drying, and then the grading, and then ship to the, you know, to the U.S. for, you know, products, you know, for further processing. This whole step, all of these steps are, you know, they involve poor farmers. And so some of the issues that we have to deal with, we have to always consider, you know, cost effectiveness of any IPM or practice that we are recommending. This is the most important insect pest, the mirid. This is the brown cocoa mirid and the black cocoa mirid. And it causes lesions on the pod, you know. And not only that, they also cause dieback. When you have untreated mirid problem, it results in dieback. This is like fire going through, you know, the plantation. It's completely, you know, killing the whole plantation. So it's an issue that local farmers have to deal with on a consistent basis. They have been using insecticides. They spray prophylactically. That's what they've been doing. But there's been issues with insecticide resistance and other safety issues that we have to consider. And then the mirids also also cause slaty beans when they start to feed on the beans. And once you have slaty beans, that will not pass, you know, inspection. And there's no way you can ship this kind of cocoa to the U.S. or to any other part of the world. So this pest gets the attention of the farmers and everybody, you know. So currently, they use improved varieties and cultural practices and pruning and chemical. Our new research is on looking at simiochemicals to control this cocoa mirid. And then one of the things that we started doing, and one of our colleagues at the USDA lab in Maryland is also involved, we're looking at the identification of sex pheromone for the brown cocoa mirid. This is just ongoing, so I'm not going to be able to present any. This is, you know, just to give you an idea of what we're doing now. And then we're also looking at traps, looking at stink bug pheromones, and see maybe we can, in the meantime, use that to monitor brown cocoa mirid. So, and that is, again, that is the end of the. I'm just going to stop there. I just want to acknowledge my collaborators. This is Dr. Vincent Umeh when he visited my lab a few years ago. And this is Dr. Joseph Anikwe when he visited my lab earlier this year. And also, this is some of the things that we do when we go there. We work with farmers. This is a picture of me about 7 years ago working with some farmers. So one of the main things I want to mention here is I want to encourage some of us who are scientists to start collaborating, thinking about collaborations in Africa. There are some challenges, I agree, but it's really rewarding when you go out there and solve real-world food production problems. It's highly rewarding, and the impact could be even greater. And so if any one of you is interested in establishing collaboration in that part of the world, please feel free to talk to me. And there are things we can do to facilitate that. Thank you very much, and I'd like to thank everybody for listening. Okay.
Thank you. We have time for only one quick question. Yes.
Have you tried male annihilation treatments with methylene against the bacteria?
No. The question is, did we try male annihilation treatments? No, we haven't really looked at that. And I think it's probably going to be a little more difficult in that part of the world because of the infrastructure that is necessary for that, you know, to be successful. So, but that's a good suggestion, but it's not something that we're looking at right now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right.